Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Happy Monday, everyone. Seth Meyers here. Today, we have another special midterm cram episode of the Late Night Podcast where our staffers Sal Gentile and Henry Melcher help you understand what's going on in politics prior to the upcoming November elections. Today, they welcome Texas Tribune Editor-in-Chief Emily Ramshaw to talk about the Texas Senate race between Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz. Now let's go to Sal and Henry.
Hey, Sal.
Hey, Henry.
We are recording this on Friday, and we're going to talk about the Texas Senate race between Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz, which is honestly probably one of the most interesting Senate races in the country. It is certainly the most covered Senate race in the country.
Yes.
Not necessarily the closest.
No.
But wow, everyone is talking about Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz because these are two fascinating candidates, and it does seem like for the first time in many years, a Democrat does have the chance of winning in Texas. Whether or not Beto O'Rourke does, he seems like he will make it at least a little bit closer than typically you'd expect for a Senate race in Texas.
It has all of the ingredients of a race that is going to attract national fascination. It certainly has attracted ours.
Yes.
So you've got, first of all, just the consequences of who controls Congress mm-hmm. after the elections. And if Democrats are competitive in Texas, that gives them a much better chance of taking back the Senate. You've also got the two individual personalities. Mm-hmm. Beto running this unapologetically leftist campaign.
No corporate money, no PAC money, showing up in every one of Texas's 254 counties.
He also is just a very personable, likable candidate mm-hmm. That's very attractive to people. And then on the other hand, you have Ted Cruz.
Very similar. Yeah. Likable, personable candidate.
Yeah, no daylight between the two of them there.
No.
Who is so deeply his
There's a collection of adjectives we could use. It's hard. He's so deeply many
I'm searching
things.
For something deep. Yes. I'm searching
I don't know
for
what
something.
It is.
I'm searching for something. He's just so off-putting.
Off-putting.
He's
let's
really
just stick with that.
It's just like, you know, he's just kind of some sushi that's been sitting out on the counter for a couple days. It's like, please, I need to put that in the car. It's just Ted Cruz, deeply unlikable man. And so, you know, people become fascinated with the possibility he could lose his Senate seat, that Beto could win on this unapologetically progressive platform.
So there's this massive national attention on this race. Let's quickly touch on the polls. Many polls have shown it within the margin of error. And then a few weeks ago, Quinnipiac said Beto O'Rourke was down 9. All the progressives freak out and say maybe this was just a pipe dream.
Like, yeah.
24 hours later, suddenly Beto O'Rourke is up 2 in another poll.
Right.
This race is close. I think people still expect that Ted Cruz will win, but we don't know. When we were thinking about this episode, we thought we should probably talk to someone in Texas about what's going on.
Yes.
Instead of just talking to all of our progressive buddies in New York and all these progressives on Twitter who are retweeting videos of him drumming to The Who at Whataburger mm-hmm. and skateboarding around at Whataburger. A lot of Whataburger content.
Yeah.
We're like, hey, let's get out of this East Coast liberal elite bubble.
Which, by the way, even as an East Coast guy, like, just Whataburger is itself a thing that I don't know. Like, I've been spent my whole life on East Coast. So when I hear Whataburger, it just, to me, sounds like it's automatically cool because Beto went there. It's like, oh, man, I'm going around talking to people. Man, you see Beto at Whataburger? It's like, I don't even know what the hell Whataburger is.
I honestly don't know.
Yeah. There is, like, this national fascination with his personality. And all the things that Ted Cruz has attacked him on are things that make him seem more likable. Like, being
he was in a
punk
band.
Yes. He skateboarded.
He swears.
Yeah. So You know, that's rare. And I think that's one reason people have become fascinated by him. Democrats have been litigating this battle over what is the best way to run a campaign like this in a place like Texas or Florida or Georgia. And Beto is now running the experiment, as we will talk about with Emily.
Yeah.
Of if you run an unapologetically leftist campaign that is not designed to appeal to these mythical swing voters that don't actually, it turns out, exist in many cases, what will that be like? Will you actually have a better and more effective political campaign than somebody who runs a mealy-mouthed message trying to reach out to those people? And we're going to find out. But to me, it seems like Beto is running as competitive a race as you can in Texas right now.
I also think something he said recently is really interesting and really important. Someone asked him, how do you expect to win in Texas when Democrats have never won in these areas of Texas? And he goes, Democrats have never won there before because Democrats never showed up there. So why would someone vote for a Democrat if a Democrat's never kind of been through the town to talk about their ideas? So I think showing up is another really important piece of this formula on top of, you know, running an honestly progressive campaign.
I do just want to preemptively respond to one thing you're going to hear Emily say, which is that she calls both of us hipsters. So we're Skyping with her, which was great because it was a great conversation, and she refers to us hipsters. I just want to say, I'm not a hipster. I don't identify
no
as a hipster.
No hipster identifies as a hipster.
Oh, so you're
what
accusing
you're saying,
me of being a hipster?
I'm not accusing you of being a hipster. I'm just saying what you're saying is not convincing.
I'm wearing a free MLB Network hat that
and
I got.
Green pants and pink socks.
Okay, but that's just because it's a laundry day, okay? I'm not a hipster.
Uh-huh.
Oh, are you a hipster?
I don't identify as one, but that makes me even closer to being a hipster.
So you're meta-aware that you are a hipster?
Which is the most hipster thing to be, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So to get some much-needed perspective from actually someone who's covering this in Texas, we talked to Emily Ramshaw, the editor-in-chief of the Texas Tribune. And she talked to us in the middle of the Texas Tribune Festival, which is this huge festival in Austin. So it's incredibly kind of her to take some time to talk to us up here in New York. So here is Emily. All right, we are here with Emily Ramshaw, the editor-in-chief of the Texas Tribune. She's Skyping into this podcast, which is very exciting. Emily, thank you so much for being here.
Yes, gentlemen, I'm thrilled.
So I wanted to ask you this. This is probably the most watched Senate race in America right now. Everyone is watching what's going on in Texas. It's not necessarily the closest Senate race, but it's maybe one of the most interesting because Democrats have wanted to win in Texas for forever. You've got these big personalities, Beto O'Rourke and Ted Cruz. As a journalist in Texas, what is it like seeing this massive attention on this one race?
Well, a couple different things. I mean, the first thing to note is that we have not elected a Democrat statewide here in Texas in a quarter century. That's a quarter century, 25 years. And so I think all of us are looking at this race. I think the media is kind of looking at it and saying, oh, my God, like, is there actually going to be a tight race for the first time in forever? You know, the media loves a good fight. So like I think everybody's kind of amped up about this. However, the national coverage, we are doing a lot of eye rolling about it because, you know, I still think at the end of the day, this is going to be maybe a close race, but a close race that Ted Cruz wins. And the national fawning over this sort of, you know, Kennedy-esque candidate is a little bit irritating.
It's okay. Democrats have not won in a quarter century in a statewide race in Texas. And it seems like on one end, Beto O'Rourke would be doing the exact opposite of what you should be doing in Texas, according to like some political conventional wisdom. He is running a very progressive left-leaning campaign. Why do you think that's resonating? What do you think it is about, even taking the personality outside of it, that the policies he's running on do seem to be connecting with Texas voters, whether or not he wins?
I think, you know, you have had candidates time and time again in the Democratic Party in Texas who have tried to be middle of the road candidates, thinking that they can pull away Republicans or independents or more moderates. And it just hasn't worked. I mean, you had, you know, Wendy Davis, who was sort of the last great hope for Democrats in Texas. You know, she ran a campaign where she came out and said, basically, like, you know, I'm for gun rights. She was trying to sort of seek that middle road and she lost terribly. And everybody thought this was going to be a super competitive race. So I think Beto is taking a different approach. He's saying, you know, I'm not going to compromise my beliefs. This is where I come down on these issues. I think a lot of Texans do too. And I think if I travel the entire state, I can mobilize them to get out and vote.
Mm-hmm. Can I just ask you a question? Because you talked about sort of the national attention. So even Republicans in sort of national circles, this race has caught their eye. There was that story about Mick Mulvaney essentially saying like likability matters. And I guess my question is, I've just been kind of curious because I want to get an answer to this outside of my bubble. In Texas, put aside the actual political circumstances, does anyone actually like Ted Cruz?
All right, so you're asking the journalist the question.
Yes, just your anecdotal sense of like, as a journalist walking around talking to people, do they like beam with joy when they see Ted Cruz?
No, they don't beam with joy when they see Ted Cruz. And I think this question about likability here in Texas is a legit question. I mean, if you travel to the far corners of this state, you hear a lot of Republicans saying, look, I don't think Ted Cruz is a particularly likable guy, but I think he's a super effective guy, and that's why I keep voting for him. Hmm. But yeah, I mean, the fact that you have on the national stage people in Trump's administration questioning the likability of Texas's junior senator, like, it's an issue. It's a thing, right? And people are playing off of it. There are billboards going up around the state where people are questioning Ted Cruz's likability, you know, reminding Texas voters what Trump thought of Ted Cruz, mm-hmm. you know, what George W. Bush thought of Ted Cruz. So clearly this is the narrative that they want to amp up, especially because Beto does seem so likable.
The most prominent Republicans, several presidents, John Boehner, the former Speaker of the House, they've all, there's been everything from like Lucifer to calling him, like they've had every sort of name. And I'm actually curious about this. Like, do Republican voters, do they remember that Ted Cruz was humiliated nationally by Donald Trump, then pretended to not support him for like 5 seconds and then immediately like rolled over and supported Donald Trump? And does that matter then? Because like there is this thing of like Trump, the thing that he succeeds with Republican voters is just his like projection of strength, his performance of being like a dominant alpha. And Ted Cruz was humiliated by him. So does that matter to Republican primary voters at all?
Amazingly, it does not seem to matter. And you'd think, you know, Donald Trump is getting ready to come down to Texas yeah. to campaign for Ted Cruz. And I think those of us who watch this race are thinking like, what the hell? Why would Ted Cruz want this guy who basically like called his wife ugly, accused his dad of like being part of the Kennedy assassination? I mean, these are like not gentle, friendly, you know, election ribbing. I mean, this is like legit character assassination. And yet he still wants him to come down here and campaign for him. So, but the fact of the matter is, in Texas, Donald Trump is still really popular. And for those, you know, Republican primary voters, for those far right voters who you want to mobilize in November, Donald Trump is still a selling point. So I think, you know, Cruz basically kind of has to like eat and say, come on down here and campaign for me. I don't know if I'm allowed to say on your podcast. Sorry.
Oh, you're fine.
Oh, please, please. As many times as you can, please say Ted Cruz has to eat. Please say that phrase as many times as you like.
So Donald Trump is coming down here to campaign for Ted Cruz, and we'll see how that goes.
Can I just say one thing very quickly? It's a very funny irony that Beto looks like is and has been compared to a Kennedy, and Cruz now has to beg Trump to come down
totally.
After having accused his dad of yeah. killing JFK.
Yes, but can we talk about that, these Kennedy comparisons a little bit? I mean, the yes. the national media fawning over this guy, like if you look at, you know, the last 30 national profiles written of Beto O'Rourke, it's all his hair, his hair, his hair. And he skateboards. Did you know he can skateboard? And he eats at Whataburger. You know, Beto O'Rourke, he's just like us. I mean, it is so ridiculous, like, to look at this spectrum of when people say, you know, the liberal media, like, you do read these articles and you think, oh my God, get over yourselves.
I will say, like, yeah, there have been so many articles that do all of that. And then he drums to the Who at a Whataburger, and it was literally everywhere. Like, I love reading about Beto. I think it's very exciting. The Whataburger video was kind of crazy. It was not that amazing. He's drumming to the Who at Whataburger, which is great, but it was, it is amazing how much attention this race is getting. And then around that time, there's a photo of Ted Cruz on an airplane, just like sadly looking at a photo of Beto O'Rourke on his phone. Does Ted Cruz realize how likable Beto is and how unlikable he is?
I think Ted Cruz absolutely realizes how likable Beto is, which is why he's nervous in running the campaign he is. And like, let's be clear, America realizes how likable Beto O'Rourke is. I mean, he's raised something like $24 million compared to Cruz's $16 million. I mean, that is a huge for a Democrat in Texas to be mm-hmm. outraising the incumbent Republican senator like that. I mean, you know, yes, Ted Cruz is sweating, and, you know, it makes perfect sense. That said, I mean, I think you saw in the first debate, and hopefully we're going to have a couple more here, but I think you saw in the first debate, Ted Cruz is super comfortable on that stage. And I think he knows when he is one-on-one with Beto, he really shines. He can out-debate him. My husband calls him the assassin debater, and I think that's a much better term than master debater.
Well, assassin, but, it runs in the family.
Yeah, that's right, of course, yeah.
Exactly. You know, Ted Cruz wants to be on stage with Beto O'Rourke as much as possible, even despite Beto O'Rourke's great hair.
You bring up the skateboard thing, which you're absolutely right. There is a sort of national media fascination with Beto's personality. But Ted Cruz has also, at least to some degree, made a campaign around trying to make it seem like he's trying to essentially in some way make it seem like Beto's only a personality, right? Like that he brought, like the Texas GOP was like tweeting out like all these photos of
he's,
him. And
he's
stuff
in
like
a, he was in a band. He yeah. skateboards. He swears.
Yeah.
You can't
he used
trust
to have long
guy.
Hair. He yeah. wore yeah. a black flowered dress.
Yeah. yeah. And the, and even their response was very funny because like they're, and to some degree they're right. Like Twitter is a bubble. It's not representative of Texas voters. So when
tell
they tweet
that to Governor Cynthia Nixon.
So when they tweeted all this stuff, there was the natural reaction you would expect to get from Twitter. And then even then they responded and they were like, oh, looks like we're being owned by out-of-state liberal voters and people who use the word rad. And even that is wrong. Like no one uses the word rad. Like there's no New York liberals who are walking around going, hey, rad, man, the subway's rad, you know, like, but nonetheless, they have tried to make that at least a part of their campaign.
Absolutely. I mean, I think, look, it kind of backfired at what you're talking about, all this social media traffic from the Cruz camp or from Republicans that was sort of trying to poke fun at Ted Cruz, totally backfired, or poke fun at Beto O'Rourke, backfired because Beto is really like the hipster's dream candidate, right? And like every picture they put out of him in a black floral dress is like another vote for hipsters in America, hipsters in Texas. I mean, I've seen people mobilized around this race who have never been mobilized in anything. And yes, these are probably like people in my peer group, but like the sort of Austin hipster set, the Dallas and Houston hipster set that is finally engaged in something, you know, I haven't seen anything like it before. That said, I think they are not indicative of the people who need to get to the polls in order for this race to legitimately be competitive. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a turnout game like every other election and certainly like every other race in Texas. And we don't exactly have a track record of the Democrats being able to get people to the polls on election day. So that's why I still remain pretty skeptical despite all of this, you know, crazy attention.
I do want to ask, because we've been talking about the persona around Beto O'Rourke, but the issues he's running on are really interesting. He wants to ban AR-15s, legalize marijuana, Medicare for all. There's a whole host of very progressive issues. And it seems like the way he talks about them really is connecting. And again, as we were saying earlier, he's making the bet that there are people around Texas that do hold more progressive views. Do you think he is showing Texas is not as conservative as it certainly maybe it seems from the outside from people maybe here in New York?
I think there are a lot of people in Texas who are very liberal, but I think they are wildly outnumbered by people mm-hmm. who are conservative or moderately conservative. You know, I think honestly, what you're seeing is more of people being fed up with the status quo and fed up with Ted Cruz and ready for something new than they are, you know, ready to ban AR-15s and being ready to, you know, institute Medicaid for all. You know, I think you're seeing a lot of excitement around him, but I'm still not sure how much this is going to resonate among, you know, everyday voters, particularly on those issues that are super far to the left. I think Ted Cruz is trying to sort of paint Beto O'Rourke into a corner on this kind of stuff. You saw him at the debate, you know, compare Beto to Bernie Sanders, which is that was Ted Cruz's effort to be nice, by the way. That was the what he this said. Was, yeah,
so,
that was an
such
amazing
a telling, such a telling moment. You're so right. Because he was essentially because what was the question? It was like say something nice about each other, right?
Nice.
And
Ted Cruz,
Yeah. And Beto genuinely did. And then Ted Cruz was like, I genuinely believe that you're sincere about turning the country into a socialist hellhole, just like Bernie Sanders.
Just like Bernie Sanders. If the nicest thing you can say about something, I know, I think I tweeted like, oh my God, like in the moment where you're supposed to be nice, he literally could not, he
couldn't
was incapable of being nice. And somebody from Ted Cruz's campaign like started attacking me on Twitter, said, you're supposed to be an impartial journalist. I said, this is impartial.
Yes.
I mean, this is, well, you know, he can't help himself.
Beto should have just turned down and be like, you know what, your dad did kill JFK.
Well, Beto had, he had a better response than that. Ted Cruz cannot help himself and says Beto wants to turn America into a socialist hellhole, and then Beto just goes, true to form.
It was this perfect button. That was the mic drop.
I am curious, because one of the other things I've been reading about this race is that whether or not Beto wins, he will have brought out increasing turnout among Democrats that could help down ballot races. Do you buy that, or do you think that's still maybe wishful thinking?
So this is the last election in Texas where we're going to have single ticket voting. So like you could say, you know, I'm going to just vote for Democrats. You can pull the lever just for Democrats. And, you know, quickly the whole ballot populates with Democrats. This is the last time we're going to have that. So like in future elections, you'll have to choose every single party. So if voters just go straight in and they decide they're going to vote for all the Democrats because they're excited about Beto, that really could have a trickle down effect for other Democrats. I also think turnout could really be interesting for, I mean, there are a whole range of congressional races that we're watching in Texas that are probably going to be closer than they've been in a long time. And, you know, a couple of those, you guys have probably seen this like viral MJ Hager ad. Yeah. She is the one who has the, you know, helicopter door from her military service, like in her living room or in her kitchen in this ad. She's a candidate in a close race, a Democrat running against a Republican in a race that's probably going to be closer than it could have been. You know, there's Gina Ortiz Jones, who's running against Will Hurd, who is famously the friend and road trip partner of Beto O'Rourke. So there are a bunch of races where enthusiasm for him could affect the Democrats down ballot.
I will say that, like, one of the things that's interesting about watching Texas from outside of the state, so I'm curious to get your perspective actually there on the ground, is it's not only the personalities that have gotten a lot of national media attention, but also that it's become this sort of laboratory for how both parties are now running their campaigns and what they're talking about. In the same way that, like, Florida has become, with Andrew Gillum being Democratic nominee and Stacey Abrams. So Beto, obviously, as we've talked about, is running this unapologetically progressive campaign. Ted Cruz seems to be, out from the outside, you could tell me what it feels like in Texas, it seems like he's running a campaign on Beto's going to ban barbecue and he stands with NFL athletes who kneel. And it's much more become the sort of cultural resentment issues that Trump ran his campaign around, as opposed to, like, all the things Ted Cruz used to be or pretended to be, like, you know, a constitutional scholar dedicated to the vision of the founding fathers and, like, limited government and all that stuff. Those are to some degree still the buzzwords that Republicans use. But more and more, it's like, hey, if you like when NFL athletes kneel, then you should vote for Beto. Is that what their campaign has become?
Look, he's throwing red meat to the base. I mean, this is not the time of the campaign when you talk about, you know, your merits versus somebody else's. You try to paint them into, you know, the corner as being a sort of a despicable human being, somebody who, you know, does not stand for the Constitution, somebody who, you know, is not a patriot. I mean, interestingly, there are a lot of parallels between this race and Cruz's insurgent race, his, you know, his primary race for the Senate seat. You know, everything from sort of Cruz used to frame himself as the grassroots populist candidate, and now Beto O'Rourke is trying to sort of frame himself that way. You know, the sort of speculation around a potential future presidential bid. I mean, I think Cruz is watching this play out, and it's kind of like, oh, this bears a lot of resemblance to my last race when I, you know, upset the incumbent or the likely winner. So I think you're seeing a lot of parallels in these particular races. And I think in order to defeat that, Ted Cruz just feels like he has to go for the jugular and make Beto out to be a person, not just a candidate.
Ted Cruz has been saying that if you elect Beto O'Rourke, you will turn Texas into California.
And he talks about, yes, and the Beto Wood. You know, he was like, oh, the Hollywood sign is being replaced with Beto Wood.
Beto Wood.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Texas is changing. There are a lot of people from California moving to Texas. There are a lot of people from many states moving to Texas. How does that attack play with Texans that it could become this liberal hellscape of California?
Liberal hellscape. You know, I think, again, this is something that Republicans use all the time when they're running in Texas. It's like to prevent the Californication of Texas. Mm-hmm. And they do this over and over again. Greg Abbott, our governor, was like really on this train. We're constantly, you know, shitting on California as being a place that we don't want Texas to turn into. So I think, honestly, like, I think the Hollywood attack is a little bit more resonant with Republican voters in Texas. They don't want, you know, the outside influence of celebrities and all those, you know, disgusting liberals impeding our state. So I think you see that over and over and over again in these races. But again, like, I'm not sure. At the end of the day, there are very few undecided voters in this race. Uh-huh. Like, there are Republicans who know they're going to vote Republican. There are Democrats who know they're going to vote Democrat. I'm not sure there is this sort of massive independents who are going to decide, you know, oh, maybe I'm really over Ted Cruz and I'm going to vote for Beto O'Rourke. Or, oh, I don't know, Beto is too liberal for me. He's too Hollywood and I'm going to vote for Ted Cruz. Again, at the end of the day, this is about turnout. And I think historically, the Democrats have had a really hard time getting people to the polls. And this is going to be, if this is some like magical election where something different is going to happen, it's going to be because of mobilization, not because of, you know, one political attack or another.
So I do want to talk about this because we're hearing something similar about Texas not having this big Democratic machine to turn out voters. We heard that about Alabama with Doug Jones' race. Alabama did not have this big Democratic machine. What is Beto O'Rourke doing to increase turnout? And what would be the lasting legacy of the groundwork he's doing, whether or not he wins in November.
So I think, you know, his pledge has been, I'm visiting every single county in Texas. I'm going absolutely everywhere I can to try to, you know, rally people. I think the Democrats are trying really aggressively to register and get folks to the polls or all these mobilization efforts across the state. Again, I mean, this is all like a big TBD, right? Because they've said they've done all these things in the past and it hasn't worked. They're hoping they finally have a candidate who's so exciting that, you know, people will show up. If they are successful, this could be really, really crucial for Texas. I mean, obviously not just for the country, but for Texas Democrats, because we have seen so many races that have been super close, where, you know, like Hillary Clinton, for example, won those districts in the presidency, but, you know, the Republican candidate for lower office won the seat. So there are, you know, congressional seats, legislative seats, particularly in Dallas and in Houston, in the suburbs and the exurbs, that are like super close to being purple, maybe even blue. They just haven't had the right candidate on the top of the ballot to push them over the edge.
There was just another amazing moment captured by you guys recently. You did these interviews with Ted Cruz and Beto O'Rourke where you asked him all these different questions. And one of the main questions you asked him was, will you serve out your 6 years as senator? Because people are already talking about Beto running for president. Of course, Ted Cruz is always running for president. Beto said, no, I will not run for president. I will serve 6 years. Did Ted Cruz ramble for 2 minutes?
It was like 2 minutes. And let me tell you, so we asked Ted Cruz, like, are you going, do you pledge to serve your entire term? And he says, let me tell you about the Alamo.
No,
and then
no,
like rambles
no.
for 2 minutes. I'm like, we know about the Alamo. And let me talk to you about the first man on the moon and, you know, property rights in space. And like, it's this 2 to 3 minute rambling thing. And he doesn't answer the question at all. So this should basically, and we ask Beto O'Rourke and he immediately says, yeah, I think to the chagrin of a lot of Democrats, actually, like, absolutely, I will serve my full 6 year term. I won't even consider doing anything else until I've served a full term. Mm-hmm. So you basically have Beto O'Rourke, who seems to be a guy of his word, saying, no f-ing way am I running for president, you know, if I'm elected to the Senate. And Ted Cruz basically saying, Alamo space, you can't count on me for more than a couple of years.
Oh my God. Not only is like somebody trying to like educate you on things you already know about, like the Alamo, so annoying, but also he talks like he's trying to sell you insurance. Let me tell you about like it's like he just knocked on your door. It's so,
He is brilliant. I have to say, you know, I've interviewed a lot of lawmakers in my day, and Ted Cruz is the only person I've ever interviewed who I was like sweating. I was so nervous. I felt, really? You know, ill-prepared. I felt dumb. He is so smart and he is so on message that, you know, I think anybody would be nervous to be on stage next to him. I mean, he is a brilliant political mind, whether you think he's likable or not.
Well, given that, how pissed is he still that he lost to Trump? Like, he's so smart. How pissed is he?
Well, I think it's why you see him not saying that he'll serve a full Senate term. I mean, I think he thinks he got robbed. Yeah. I think a lot of people think he got robbed. I mean, I think basically anybody who ran against Trump thinks they got robbed. Yeah. And they're all having to basically, like, eat and watch this administration, you know. I mean, it's a train wreck, and they all have to basically sit back and, like, pretend they still support the guy.
It's been such an exhausting week that I'm just going to make, like, a montage of you saying they have to eat and listen to it over and over because it's going to make
Thank
me
you.
Feel so much better.
I know. That's my gift to you, my parting gift. Well, what do you guys think? I mean, you're on the outside looking in, and, you know, luckily I get
that.
To Skype with you, and I can see that you're both obviously hipsters. Like,
yes.
Are you taken by Beto O'Rourke?
Totally. Totally.
I mean, here's what I'll say. I think this is what I was saying earlier about the sort of, like, it's become a laboratory for how you run a campaign. Mm-hmm. And, like, lefties have been saying for a while that, like, chasing the sort of mythical swing voter is a fool's errand. So I don't know if Beto has like a realistic chance of winning, but at the very least, I'm happy that somebody is finally running a campaign like that.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the what you just hit on, it. Somebody's finally running a campaign. I mean, one of the problems in Texas is that Democrats who have, like, you know, real potential in their political careers have been very loath to run here and to run statewide. And so, like, you have seen this history of the Democrats who have great potential, like, not wanting to, you know, be the sacrificial lamb or, like, blow their chances too early. I mean, Julian Castro is a pretty perfect example, you know, so, first Hispanic to, you know, give the opening night speech at a DNC. You know, he could have run for governor. He could have run for Senate. He serves in HUD. He was, you know, in HUD in the Obama administration, like, he hasn't really taken the next step. I think a lot of these guys are really afraid of getting beaten. And so they don't jump in. And therefore, Texas doesn't get great Democratic candidates. Beto, you know, has taken a big risk.
we were talking earlier about all these kind of fawning profiles, and I think that is certainly part of the appeal, that he's cool and he skateboards and drums to the Who and all these things. But I do just think he is what you were saying, Sally. He's running the experiment. Where everyone on the left is saying Democrats should run on issues they believe in. They shouldn't poll test everything, and they should show up. And I think that's what's so compelling about him, is he knows it's a long shot, and he's just started running and showing up everywhere. And I also think, which we haven't really touched on, he's raising a ton of money, and he's doing it without PAC money or special interest money, which he talks about all the time. But I do think that is a really important thing for Democrats to keep in mind, that Democrats for so long have been kind of ridiculing the power of money in politics and then take so much corporate money. So I think he's making a really strong case and putting a really important data point out there that, hey, we can say money in politics is really bad, and we can also reject corporate money and still receive a lot of money. So I think
$24 million with no PAC money is pretty spectacular.
These are presidential numbers. Numbers that people running for president would like.
In terms of like the battles that Democrats have had nationally about how to run these campaigns, at the very least, what I think could happen is just that the math will bear out the argument that running a Beto campaign is better than running a mealy-mouthed campaign where you try to appeal to a mythical swing voter that doesn't exist. And so if he does better than he has really any right to in Texas, even if he loses, that's going to allow people in Democratic circles to say, and this is why the same people are watching the Andrew Gillum race and the Stacey Abrams race, but people at least are going to be able to say, see, just from a pure political perspective, putting aside the merits of the issues, that's a better way to run a campaign. That's a more effective way to get close to winning in these places.
I also think the eloquence really matters. I mean, his ability, Beto's ability to speak publicly and off the cuff, really brilliantly and with, you know, great heart and emotion. We haven't seen a candidate like that in a really long time.
You could say he's like a Kennedy.
You could say he's like a Kennedy. What I was going to say, actually, we down here in Texas, we have this Texas Tribune Festival going on, and we had John Kerry here speaking last night. And I was struck actually by how much I thought Beto O'Rourke, sort of in both appearance and in eloquence, reminded me of John Kerry, which was a really interesting parallel that I hadn't really seen before, especially because everybody's talking about all the Kennedys. You're both shaking your heads.
Well, that's not a good sign for Democrats.
No, you don't want
to get signed for Democrats who want to run for president. He's got the eloquence of John Kerry.
He looks like he's windsurfing all the time.
Yeah, well, by the way, John Kerry also would not rule out a 2020 presidential run.
Oh, God. Every Democrat in the country, you could ask
not ruling it out.
You could ask the city, somebody sitting on the city council in Sacramento, and they'd be like, listen,
why not? Emily, thank you so much for your time. It was so interesting to talk to you and talk to someone in Texas about this race, as opposed to just my friends in New York and reading Twitter.
I mean, don't get us wrong. We're going to go back to talking to our friends in New York and reading Twitter about the race in Texas.
Yeah,
but
we know best.
Yeah, we know what's happening.
We know you do. Well, just, make sure that you come down to Austin and have some barbecue with me before it gets banned.
Yes.
We'll bring all our friends from California.
I'll dye my hair and bring my punk rock band. Yeah.
We'll skateboard and we'll stop at Whataburger on the way out.
Exactly.
Emily, thank you so much. Enjoy the Tribune Festival.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
I love a good parasocial relationship with a celebrity who will probably never know my name.
I mean, honestly, who knows? Don't count yourself out. But my favorite part about these feuds is how they're ignited by the tiniest things.
Jada, I love you. G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it.
I accidentally laminated my brows too much.
It starts small and then it gets so big.
To be honest, Naomi, I'm fearful of you to this day.
I don't know her.
We all just have to admit, we're addicted. Everybody has opinions. Everyone picks sides.
Leave Britney Spears alone right now.
From Wondery, I'm Sydney Battle.
And I'm Matt Bellassai.
And this is Dis and Tell, la, 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 where we unpack why we get so invested in these feuds and whether or not our attention only makes the whole thing worse.
Follow Dis and Tell wherever you get your podcasts.